You're listening to the MMAMadhouse.com Clips of the Week.
Good afternoon, firework shop.
Firework displays, talk to me.
Who's this?
Name's Terry.
And what do you want?
I need a fireworks display, a good one.
Oh, okay. £600 start offer.
And what do I get for that?
7 minutes firework display.
7 minutes of fireworks.
Yes.
Now, would these be the seven greatest minutes of firework display ever seen?
Yes.
Beautiful. I'm celebrating.
And what you celebrating?
My divorce.
Okay, then.
She was Hawaiian, 22. She came up to me wearing a grass scarf. 4 hours later, I had a cardiac arrest. Could you believe it?
Too much sniffing glue there.
Don't touch the stuff. Don't do drugs. Don't do prick sticks. The places I was waking up. My God. At this one time, right, I was in Siberia. Vladimir's there stripped naked, Terry. I'm going to take you for a walk. He takes me to the little sauna in the middle of a field. We get in there. There's 17 of the finest Siberian prostitutes you've ever seen in your life. You can guess the rest.
Okay, then, so what date do you want me?
Well, let's go 3 weeks Friday.
And where's it happening?
Well, this is the thing, right? I'm thinking my house, her house, or a father-in-law's house.
And where do you live?
I live at my house. You're a bright one, aren't you? I'll tell you, what's your name?
Anthony.
Anthony, nice to meet you. Usually people like to do the whole email. I'll hang about. Now, don't talk to me. Email me. Then I can ignore you. It's the only way it goes. The conversation is dead, I'll tell you that. When was the last time you had a decent conversation?
Before you rang.
Who are you talking to?
My girlfriend.
About what?
Sex.
Now we're talking. Were you talking or whispering?
Bit of both.
Bit of both. That's what I like. You see, have a little whisper, bit heavy breathing. You lead her into the bathroom, turn off all the lights, and then she can be who you want her to be.
So, come on, back onto the fireworks.
Right, fireworks. I want a whiz-whiz pop, a wow-ching-ching, a pit-pit-pow,
yep.
And you can make the rest up yourself.
You can have whizzy-whizzy, shim-shim, pop-pop, bang-bang, whatever you want.
I like a bit of bang-bang.
Do you?
Well, don't you?
I love a bit of bang-bang.
Of course you do. Thank you and good night, much love.
We want information. Information. Information.
Who are you?
The new number two.
Who is number one?
You are number six.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
We'll be right back. Hey now, Carl the Madman here. Welcome to the Clips of the Week, and what a week it was. I'm not going to waste your time listening to me. Listen to my mumbo jumbo. Let's do this.
For everybody that is listening around the world tonight, would you like to introduce yourself to them?
Sure. I'm June White. I'm Dana's mom.
Wow.
Now,
holy smokes.
Everybody thought I was kind of pulling their leg when I said I talked to you today. They're like, nah, no way, no way. And, you know, doing a little bit of research, listening to some of the interviews you've done and everything, you have a very interesting story. You have what we like to talk about as the backside of the sport, especially when it comes to probably the most powerful man in the sport of MMA today, and that's Dana, in some people's eyes, not mine, but, you know, some people's eyes. You've also put out an interesting book that, you know, tells a little bit of your life and his life at the younger years into some of the more recent times.
Yeah.
Is everything still the same between you guys right now?
Yeah, unfortunately it is, you know. We just, as the UFC grew and as Dana's head grew, we just didn't see things eye to eye very well. And so we don't speak to each other anymore. If you know Dana, it's kind of easy to believe.
Okay, I'm going to be honest. You know, I talked to you today and I told you, you know, my company is kind of anti-Zuffa. You know, we call people that are diehard, you know, Zuffa fans who think that's all there is to the sport. We call them Zuffa zombies, and, you know, it's something that we claim not to be. And part of the reason is over the years that we've grown this company, we have seen the way the UFC and Dana White and that part of the sport has changed. And for my taste, it's not something I like or in the direction it's gone in. Obviously, you, for personal reasons, probably have a disdain for the growth and the way it's gone because of what it's done to your life, you know. So I've got to wonder, you know, because I'll be honest, I've never read your book. I read some excerpts, but so these answers might be in it, and I apologize ahead of time.
That's
but at what point did you see the Dana and the UFC as kind of a cancer eating at your family that you spent so many years supporting and keeping together?
Yeah, it was funny. It was right soon after they started turning it around and making a profit. I'd say easily probably a year or two after, you know, the UFC became popular and, you know, everybody kind of knows the whole story, how, you know, they had lost all that money and everything. And then, they finally turned it around and started making big bucks with it. And it was probably maybe a year or two after that that I could see big changes in Dana. And even the direction that they were going with the sport, he was really passionate about it in the beginning when he first met Tito and Chuck. And, of course, he was on the other side then. You know, they didn't own it at the time, and he was managing the two of them, and he was fighting for better pay, which is ironic now, for the fighters and things like that, you know. And then once he got on the other side, I could see the changes in him with everyone around him, his family, the fighters, his employees. So I used to try and keep him grounded, and it only worked for a very short time, though. I think even more than the money, you know, he came into money, a lot of money, really, really quickly. And but I think it was the power he wielded. It was actually really quite unbelievable. When the book first came out, I got beat up big time by all the little Zuffa zombies there and other people too. So, and I was surprised. I mean, yeah, he called, you know, MMA organizations, and I mean, I went to a fight. I don't know if you remember back, the IFL was trying to make it big right around that time, too, and I went to one of their fights because I knew some of the people there. They had actually at one time worked for the UFC and left and gone with this organization instead. And he made a big deal about it when he found out. He actually had my tickets pulled. I was coming with a bunch of friends. They pulled my tickets. But they actually even tried to cancel my hotel room, too. But eventually somebody gave me some other tickets, and I went. But it turned into a huge ordeal. And not too long ago, I went to a Bellator fight, too. And the same thing happened there, apparently. Stories always eventually come back to me, but he called Spike, even after he had screwed those guys over and went off on them, how dare they give his mom tickets and let her have, you know, front row seats to one of their fights and on and on and on. So it's kind of, he wants control over everyone and everything. And I never kind of, once he started that, I didn't like the way he treated people. So that was where our beef began, but it got bigger.
Now, look, that's something that, you know, I've said honestly just as an opinion that he has become power hungry because everybody bows. If he says jump and you don't say how high, you don't fight for him. Your team doesn't fight for him. Your sponsor's not in. And it's funny that you touched on power as the evil here. You know, obviously, from what I saw in the interviews, you raised him different than that. When you saw that he started hanging around with those, that upper echelon crowd, and started becoming somebody that people feared, were you heartbroken at that?
Yeah, you know, and so many people who knew him and I kept saying, oh, you know, it's just, he's caught up in the moment of all, you know, the excitement and the money and the power, and he'll change, he'll see, and, you know, the old Dane will be back, you wait and see, but that never happened. So, yeah, it was very disappointing to see the person he became. I mean, you know, he did a great thing for MMA, you know, when he brought it sort of more into a focus of the sport, and that was the direction that he wanted to go. But then he lost that focus too. You know, it then became more about how much money him and his partner, the Fertittas. I mean, that's, you know, Dana stands in the front, and he's the guy that everyone sees. But the Fertittas have some mighty big power all over the country, well, probably all over the world now, but, you know, and their main focus is money, so nothing else really matters.
So with the power, and he just started becoming, I guess, more and more standoffish with you guys, I mean, did he give you guys explanations, or was he just, like, honestly a cold-hearted bastard like he can seem to be through the media, where he was like, boom, you're done?
Yeah, he was pretty much a cold-hearted bastard. Yeah, it was, and it was like you said, somebody brought this to my attention that there's actually a personality disorder like this, and when I read it, I could have checked off every one of the things as being Dana, that he constantly needed praise from people around him, that, you know, he had to be put up on a pedestal and think he was better and higher than everybody else, and constantly letting other people know that, too. And that, you know, anyone who dared say anything negative about him or go against him sent him into a rage. And these were all part of the personality disorder. And I'm like, oh, my God, that's Dana. You know, of course, as I read on, of course, it always, no matter what personality disorder you have, it always goes back to mom. Mom praised him too much as a child.
Didn't give him enough hugs.
What?
That's what I say to everybody. Your mom must not give you enough hugs. That's what I say to people.
Yeah, I'm exactly. Sure. Like, apparently, I did the opposite. I gave too much, you know.
With you and the immediate family, knowing him growing up, knowing the good, the bad, the ugly, you know, was he, as he grew with this power, was he... like, thumb on you, watch what you say, you know, check with me to, you know, the rest of the family besides you?
At first, you know, I noticed it before anybody else. Something being his mom, I guess I would. But, you know, my brothers eventually, who, our family was really close. We all hung out together. We did holidays together and vacations. And so, you know, I have four brothers and a sister, and we were all close, and we all did things together. So a couple of my brothers were like, oh, Dana and I are so tight. You know, him and I would never fall out. Well, that didn't take long. One of my brothers actually moved from Connecticut out to Las Vegas. Dana's wife kept bugging him, you know, sell your house, come out here, live out here near us. And I told him, I could see it then. I'm like, don't do it, Michael. You'll be so sorry. And he said, no, Dana and I are tight. Nothing could ever happen between us. So he went, and he did live in one of Dana's houses out there. Dana couldn't sell it, and he had bought another one. So he told my brother, live in the house, take care of it for me, keep it up. So all of a sudden, after about, it was probably maybe 2 years, Dana said, yeah, he said, I'm getting rid of the house. You need to get out. And so my brother said, well, give me a little time, you know, to find a place. He said, I'll buy something out here. And he said, no. He said, you got till next week. And he said, if you're not out, I'll have the sheriffs come remove you. Boom. So
damn.
Obviously my brother said or did something that Dana didn't like. And that's the kind of response you get, you know. And that's what I didn't like. There were people who started out with Dana with the UFC when the times were really hard and bad, and they stuck by him, you know, worked around the clock. And most of those people are not with Dana anymore. And the way he treated those people, I had a real issue with that, too. So,
I'm curious, you know, we got fans wanting to ask all kinds of questions because this is, you know, truly an honor to have you on. I mean, you know, one question I'll start with is, do you find it just really distasteful that he spends more money gambling than he does paying fighters or helping family?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the reasons I wrote the book was an issue with my mom who was sick. And she passed away. She was just short of 94 years old, but she was a very sort of healthy 94-year-old. Like, she flew all over the country by herself, and she still drove and everything. But she also lived in a little trailer in Florida, had this old car that she drove around. When I used to go down to check on her and spend time with her, I hated driving it. It was a nightmare. You put the blinker on, the windshield wipers would come on, you know. You had to take the blinker handle and quickly click it up and down about 20 times to make the wipers stop. So, but here she was, and he could have made her life pretty comfortable, you know, her last few years. And he did nothing to help her out, absolutely nothing. And at one point when we knew she was sick, he called her. He hadn't spoke to her in 2 years, no reason. She actually lived with us a good part of the time while Dana was growing up. And so she's not the kind of grandmother you saw at Christmas or Thanksgiving or something, you know. And he called her and he said, oh, Graham, you know, I'll send my jet down to get you. I'll bring you up to Vegas. I'll get the, you know, the best health care money can buy for you. And she never heard from him again. It was typical. He did that to her 1 year at Thanksgiving. He was supposed to in the plane to pick her up, and they were all going to Mexico, and she waited, and he never sent the plane. But so I just said to her, Mom, I said, it's typical of Dana. I said, you shouldn't expect anything from him. And so I let it go at that. But then I was outside one day, and one of her neighbors came by and said, what are you doing here? I said, my mom's sick. I'm here taking care of her. And she said, oh, we all thought she was gone. And I said to him, gone where? And they said, well, she told the whole neighborhood that her grandson was coming to get her, and that he was going to take, care of her. So that was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back for me. I just, I lost it.
Wow.
I wrote a book. what a bastard he was. That's not all. The book isn't really that bad. A lot of people who have never read it say that, but it tells about his early life, you know, what kind of a kid he really was before he turned into the person he is today, the man he is today.
That's a great lead into another fan question. You know, obviously there's rumors, stories about everybody at this kind of power level in life. But one fan said they wanted me to ask if it's true that he had a bedwetting problem till his early teen years.
No, he didn't.
Okay.
I never heard that one before.
But hey, look, this is the great thing about the show you're on tonight. This is an open show. We don't pre-book guests. You know, we just let anybody call in and talk. And we've got fans all over the world asking these questions. So, you know, what questions that I feel are good to ask you, I will. And I thought, you know, hey, I've never heard that one. Why not?
I know. That was a good one. I like the way some of the stories come out about him, too. That was another thing that made me angry. You know, he started a couple of interviews I did way back when the book first came out, you know, how you're sitting waiting to come online and talk, and you can hear the radio show. And a couple of them sort of referred to me as Eminem's mom. At the time, I didn't even know who Eminem was. I had to go online and look him up. I'm like, who is that? And then when I found out, I was pretty insulted. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm nothing like that, you know. So, but, I mean, Dana started coming across as, you know, at 17, he was on the top streets of Vegas and Boston, a kid on his own, having to fend for himself, you know, and I'd get onto these interviews and these guys basically, you know, be trying to build Dana up and what a bad mom I am for writing a book about him. But, you know, I would say, how do you think Dana knows the Fertittas from being a tough kid living in the streets? I said, do you really think they'd have anything to do with someone like that? I said, no. He went to private school with them. That's how Dana knows them. You know, Dana was no, Dana was no tough living out in the streets. Dana had a good life, a very good life, and I worked really hard to give it to him. So, you know, all that crap pissed me off because I did work hard. I worked a lot. I was a single mom. I worked a lot of hours. You know, we had a nice house, and he went to private school and the whole nine yards. So.
Now, another fan question coming in. Do you have any kind of relationship with the grandchildren?
No, and that's what really makes me mad with Dana. At first, you know, I think he thought he was going to sort of hurt me and put me in my place and show me that he was king, you know, by not sharing anything with me, you know, no money, no helping me out with anything, no material stuff. But then he added to it that you'll never see your grandkids again either. And that really did it for me. You know, I used to go out and see them when they were small. They're getting bigger now. But that when he realized, you know, withholding material things from me didn't really matter much to me at all. He said, yeah, well, guess what? Now you'll never see your grandkids. So that was very mean.
He's punishing them just as best as he's punishing you. That's horrible.
Yes, to me and the kids it was mean, you know? So,
and
they don't...
Go ahead.
They don't have anything to do with any of our family, you know? And they knew, like, my brother that had moved out there for a while, who... He's 58, but he acts like he's still 18, you know? He's one of those guys. So he kind of never grew up. But, you know, he used to go over there and wrestle with the kids, and he'd take them to their football games and all this other stuff. So when he left, the kids wanted to know why Uncle Mike wasn't around anymore, and they just said, oh, he left and moved back east. Without coming to say goodbye to the kids or anything. They just, you know, the kids were pretty hurt by it. You know, their Uncle Mike didn't even say goodbye to them. And it didn't bother him at all. He said to me once, oh, they'll get over it. I'm like, wow, that's a great outfit. Yeah, they'll get over it.
Wow. So he's this distant and cold-hearted with all his siblings, all his nieces, on your side of the family only?
He gets along with a couple of his cousins. But, yeah, basically it's mostly, it is all our family. He has to support wife's family.
Go ahead. Okay,
and
so
none of them
he's
were.
Not the same with his wife's side of the house.
No. No, she's got two sisters that he supports who, I don't know, I guess they may have worked at one time a long time ago. And then he supports his mother and father-in-law. His father-in-law, as long as I've known him, has never worked. He was in prison for a while. The old mob back in the day, I forget what he was in prison for, something with gaming. Back in the day in Vegas.
Wow. Wow. So, it's just crazy because, you know, this tough, you know, bravado that, you know, I'm, you know, tough from the streets, grew up in the boxing world, you know, all this is like far from the truth. He grew up in a well-adjusted household with a single mom who worked hard, who got him into a private school so he could get a good education. And you feel deep down in your heart, obviously, that something's broken in your son. I mean, no man treats his mom like that.
Right, his mom, his grandma, his whole family, you know. I mean, even if people don't get along with their parents, which, you know, that happens a lot, but your grandmother, I don't know anyone that would be mean to their grandparents, you know, or not help them out, you know. So,
yeah,
I don't know that person.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I mean, like, let's be honest. I mean, I don't live high on the hog by any stretch of the means, but, you know, $20,000 would change my life for a year, let alone probably somebody like your mother who had budgeted how she lived. She's lived in the same place, had the same bills. You know, $20,000 could have changed her life the last couple of years remarkably.
Right, exactly. You know, a newer, nicer car or something, you know, just something. Even when he said he was going to come pick her up because they... For a while, he would go to Mexico, some big house he rented down there for Thanksgiving. And he would fly down with his family, and he'd fly her family down. And then they also flew their cook down and a few other people. And this one year, he said to my mom, we'll come get you, and you can come spend Thanksgiving with us. And he never came and got her. Of course, then afterwards, he goes, I never said that. I'm like, oh, I know, she made it up, you know, so...
That's just, and you know, I know that I've seen a lot of the older photos where she was in them with him in, you know, the younger days, especially, you know, when you had both babies, you know, he was very young still as well. So, you know, she obviously was very, very important in his role, in his life as a young man and a child.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. She was around him a lot. Helped him out because when I was at work, I mean, she was at the house when they got home from school. I worked as a nurse and I worked in the operating room and I was on call and we were a trauma hospital. So I spent lots of hours there. And I mean, when they came home from school, she was there. She fixed dinner for them. She helped them do their homework, you know. So yeah, you know, she was more than just your typical grandmother, I would think.
We have another fan question. Is there any truth to the alleged fist fight he had with Boston mob members when he was growing up?
That story. He was telling the story that, you know, he left Boston. He did leave Boston very quickly because somebody was after him, but it certainly wasn't Whitey Bulger. And a lot of people know the guy now, and he's married and has kids, so I would never, ever say his name or anything. He was a salty, tough guy, but it wasn't the way Dana told the story. Dana seems to embellish all his stories and make them a little more exciting, you know. So he said, well, it's good for his image in the business he's in. I'm like, really? I said, I don't see it that way.
The bullshitting business.
You know, June, this is amazing to be able to sit here. I mean, like, the fans are eating this up because, you know, so many people are scared of Dana. I mean, like, we hear about it all the time. Look, we talk to fighters and managers every day, and they're like, well, if Dana calls, you just say yes. You don't even question it, you know. Otherwise, you're screwed. You're blacklisted. You know, do you think part of that mentality that he has is due to the power trip, or does he feel like he lost things as a juvenile and he's afraid not to have the control? Or, I mean, what do you think is behind this, just it's all or nothing with him?
Yeah, it is. No, it's just it's sort of a drunkenness with power, you know. I am and I can and you will, basically, you know. And it's so true. The MMA press really is disgusting. I don't know how else to put it, you know. And the reason is either you kiss Dana's ass and you write and ask questions that he wants, and if you don't, you're blacklisted and you're gone. That's it. You're done. I had a guy who was going to do an interview right after the book came out, and he had it up on his site. He's actually from the East Coast, from New Jersey. And I spoke to him on the phone, and he said, I'll call you and set things up. And I said, that's fine. You know, just let me know. And I never heard from him again. And so the way he got in touch with me was we had a mutual friend. So I was speaking with a mutual friend, and I said, yeah, I never heard back from him. I said, I don't know what happened there. And about 3 months later, he called me, and he said, I owe you an apology. And I'm like, no, that's fine. Don't worry about it. And he said, no, I want to explain to you what happened. So I said, okay. And he said he had gotten a call, and he was told that he was to remove my book from his website, and that he was never to mention my book or my name and not do any interviews with me. And if he did, his credentials would be pulled and he would be blacklisted. And he said, you know, he said, this has bothered me so much because that's not the person I am. And he said, my wife finally said to me, will you do something? She said, you are just miserable anymore. So he said, your book is back on my site. We never did do the interview, but he did get his credentials pulled. So, but he still got his site up, and he still does MMA stuff back on the East Coast here. So, but Dana was able to do that right from the beginning, the minute the UFC took off, you know. He just put a stranglehold on all the press, you know. You do what I want, and you say what I tell you to say, or else you won't be part of this. And so many guys, it is kind of exciting when you first get into it, want to be a part of it, you know. And they think it could lead to bigger and better things for them. So I can understand it somewhat.
Yeah, I definitely understand, you know, trying to control certain aspects of what's, you know, being published and talked about and the direction of your company. You obviously want to try to shine a good light on your company. But, you know, if you're hard-ass in business because you're trying to make a profit and better your company, that's understandable. But to shit all over your family just to get that done seems like that's just overboard, way out of bounds.
Yeah. And it did go way out of bounds because on Twitter, this guy, this manager, lawyer I know, put me on Twitter again, something I didn't even know anything about. I'm like, well, what am I supposed to do on there, you know? And he had put the book on there and everything. And he says, no, nothing. He said, just go on and read some of the stuff people write and things like that. And shortly after I got on it, all these people started popping up, you know, and wanting to follow me. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, you know. And some of the people all of a sudden began, like, these horrific attacks against me and my whole family. Saying things that I can't even repeat to you. And it was just awful. I was horrified by it all. I had no clue. And I truly thought it was just fans that were doing it, that were, you know, somehow thinking that they were sticking up for Dana or whatever. I didn't even know how they could possibly have known that we had had a rift at that point, you know. But then a lot of the MMA guys that were on there started telling me, this is Zuffa June. This isn't fans. They told me that Zuffa has a whole department that when they want to discredit someone, fighters, competition, whoever it is. They just set these people loose on all these social media sites and basically destroy them. So I kept waiting, hoping and praying that Dana would pop up and defend his family and say, enough, who's ever out there doing this, you know, I'll kill you if I find you. But he didn't do that, so I kind of had to believe that it was coming from Zuffa.
Wow. So
yeah,
he just, like, so you're getting threats from, you know, quote unquote fans around, you know, whether it be, you know, Zuffa induced or just straight up assholes. You're getting threatened. Your kid, your grand, you know, anybody on that side of the family is being, you know, persecuted for really nothing. I mean, it, like you touched on, the book isn't some like expose tell all where you caught him, you know, doing cocaine in a bathroom and beating a stripper up one night. You know, that's not what this is about. You know,
no,
you're
not
trying
at all.
To, yeah, you're not trying to, you know, make up dirt or ruin him because, you know, you felt slighted over something small. This is a man who literally is now attacking you, you know, and not defending you and watching you be threatened, and he's still not standing up for you, man. That is just some, I'm sorry, that's some dirty shit.
Yeah, yeah. And I was just, you know, hell-bent, you know. Dana, in one interview one time, said, I don't speak to my mom. He said, because we're too much alike and we butt heads. And I said, oh, that's interesting. But I don't know, maybe he should have kept that in the back of his mind, because I am hell-bent on finding out exactly where all of that came from. I've still, it was 2011 the book came out, and I have been hunting down online. Like I said, I wasn't very good at anything online. I hated computers. But little by little, I'm getting there, and unfortunately, for me and him, I find that, you know, those people who said it's coming from Zuffa knew what they were talking about. So it's really sad. It's really sad that that's the kind of person he truly was inside.
Ah, see, that's just horrible. I mean, and, you know, you know, anybody who's seen some of your interviews, this isn't how you raised him. This isn't the kind of mindset you guys had in your household. You know,
no.
So, you know, you've got to wonder how much does it truly play back to a disorder?
Yeah, well, exactly. And, you know, growing up, you know, way back when, we were little hippies, peace, you know, make love, not war, all of that. Didn't allow guns, of course. Now I carry an NRA card and have plenty of guns. Back in those days, you know, and Dana grew up to be, he was a very sweet little boy, you know, and he stuck up for other kids if someone was beating him up, and he was polite, he was nice, he was even an altar boy for a while, you know, in church. So people, when they first saw that picture, about fell over, I have a picture of him. I think it was his sister's first communion, and he was the altar boy. So, hard to believe it's the same person now.
Well, you know, when he came to you before, you know, obviously before everything went south and he got power hungry, you know, when the Fertittas and him went after the UFC, I mean, what was his mindset about it? Because obviously at the time you guys were on good terms, was this something that he felt that he could do this with? Was this something that was another test for him as a man, or was this something you thought that he might just, you know, try it for a year and give it up?
Yeah, he had never really stuck with anything, although at the time he had already left Boston and he had started his business out there in Vegas, teaching boxing, exercising to private clients and a lot of people like that, and he was doing fairly well with that, and that actually in one of his gyms, actually the Fertittas gym in the Fertittas corporate building, some of the guys used to use his gym, some of the fighters and some of the MMA guys, and that's how he ended up meeting Chuck and Tito. But he started out with, like I said, a real passion for doing the right thing, making the sport, you know, a world sport, a world-recognized sport. But he just, I don't know, he took that fork in the road and he took the wrong way. The only way I can look at it. You know, he had good ideas when it started out, good thoughts, you know, heading in the right direction, wanting to make it better for everyone, you know, and making the sport a really great sport. But, I mean, personally now, I don't even watch the UFC anymore. I will not watch any of their stuff. So, but their greed is going to be the undoing of them eventually here. You know, I think their fights are watered down. They have way too many of them. Yeah, when he first started, you know, after they bought it, he would call me 3, 4, 5 times a week at night. And, of course, he was in Vegas and I was in Boston. And, you know, it'd be 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, I'd get the phone call, and he would go, "Oh, Mom, you don't know what a day I've had today." You know, and he'd tell me everything that was going on. For, like, I think the first 4 years, I went to every single press conference and fight, you know, and sort of watched how things went and knew what was going on and all of that. And I really felt for him. He struggled. He was having a really hard time there in the beginning. And it just seemed like no matter how much money they dumped into it, no matter what they did, they just couldn't turn it around into the vision that he saw. You know, and then Tough finally did it for him, but it was a struggle for him, but it was something that he really believed in that could be a great sport and, you know, could bring it. He keeps comparing it to the to the NFL, although I don't think he'd want to do that today right now. he kept saying, you know, it's going to be bigger than the NFL. It's going to be like the NFL, you know. But,
yeah.
Bellator. I watch Bellator. I love Glory.
Yes.
World Series kickboxing. Absolutely love it. And I heard they're probably going under too. That owner is right about where Dana and the Fertittas were when it turned around. That, you know,
well,
you like
know, we've seen that with Glory. You know, Glory is, you know, come and gone. K1's come and gone. World Series of Fighting. I'll be curious to see what they do with all the, you know, the branching out around the world and nothing really coming from it. You know, I've got to, you know, wonder. You know, you obviously in the beginning you were there. You saw it all. Was there a time, you know, that you were, you know, glad to be part of it, or was it always, you know, kind of a sticking stress point between you guys?
No, I was glad. And actually, you know, a lot of his fights, when most of them were in Vegas, the whole family would fly out, friends would fly out, you know, and it was actually a fun time. We'd all be there together. We'd go to the press conference and the after-fight parties and all of that, you know, and you get to meet some of the fighters and stuff. So, but it was like a lot of people I knew and a lot of kids Dana had gone to school with, you know, would come to the fights. And so it was kind of fun to go to them, you know. It was sort of more of a social gathering, I'll call it, of friends and family. So, yeah, I didn't mind it at all, you know. And, I mean, every fight he would call me and go, "Mom, you're going to be here, right? You're coming, you know, a couple days early." And I'd be, "Yeah, I will be there." So, I mean, he needed the support back then, and he definitely, you know, got it from the family and his friends. Most of his old friends he doesn't have anything to do with anymore either, so. And I used to say to him all the time, keep your feet on the ground, remember who was there in the beginning when no one else would help you. And he's like, "I know, Mom, I'm never going to change. You don't have to worry about that." Boy, did that come quick.
Yeah, it's funny because I've said it since, I don't know, I saw it a long time ago. A guy named Ricky Rackman used to say it, always keep one foot in the gutter and one fist in the stars, you know, and I think that's what you have to do to be able to balance success and power, you know, and with that being said, with the power and the continual hurt that he showed you and the rest of the family and the disappointment time and time again, does it now make it easier just to have him out of your life, or is it still just as sad and painful this day as it was years ago?
It's probably still just as sad and painful, you know. I mean, I don't know. And I'm always hearing stuff, or somebody will send me something, or someone will call me and go, did you hear Dana did XYZ or whatever it is, you know. So, you know, sometimes on Twitter somebody will send me a little bit and they'll say, check this out, June, and it's something about Dana, you know, or an interview he's in or something. His gambling, you know. There was a thing one time somebody sent me, and it was, he was with a reporter who was following them around a few days before one of the fights in Vegas, and they hopped into one of the hotels, and within 20 minutes, he lost $1 million, you know. And that was, I think, just before my mom died, and I'm like, he can drop. And the reporter asked him, you know, oh, my God, that must be killing you right now. And he says, oh, I don't care. He goes, I'll win it back eventually one day, you know. And I thought, oh, my God, here's his grandmother, you know, living on her little Social Security check, you know, in a little trailer in Florida that he doesn't do anything for. And in 20 minutes, he just blew $1 million, you know. And his wife is probably worse. She doesn't gamble, but, you know, she'll go out and spend $1 million on a tennis bracelet and then go home and throw it in their safe and never even wear it. I'm like, what's wrong with you people, you know? I told him one time, I said, you know, he gets bonuses every year on top of his salary. And the first year, you know, I can't remember if it was 1.5 or 3 million was his bonus. But the second year, this is how fast that you know, they started making money. His bonus was 18 million. So I said, you know, that's a lot of money for one person to have. I said, you should consider, I said, starting a foundation. And he goes, what do you mean? And I said, well, think of something that's sort of near and dear to your heart, you know, whether it's kids with cancer or, you know, the vets coming home without limbs or something. I said, you know, that you think about. And I said, take some of your money and put it into that and use it to help other people. And he said to me, why the F would I do that?
Wow.
I wanted to cry. I'm like, who is this person? You know, I was completely shocked by it. I couldn't understand his thinking at all at that point. So,
he doesn't share a lot. That's just sad. But, you know, on the other hand, I think it's great that you have a passion for the sport. You didn't let him kill that for you, that you still like to watch the other leagues and the kickboxing and watch, you know, the growth.
Yeah.
I think you touched on a valid point that their greed eventually is going to hurt them to a point where
right.
The field is different when we look at it in the scene of MMA. So, you know, if in the next, you know, couple years, you know, something does go wrong with the corporation and he feels like, okay, it's time for me to go home and make amends. Are you ready to just open the door and try again?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to believe, but I don't see Dana ever doing that. It's not in his nature. Yeah, but I mean, you know, I would love just for him to say, I made a mistake, you know, I'm sorry for all the wasted time between you and my kids. And, you know, if you want to see them, that's fine. You know, I would welcome that. But him ever coming and saying, let's mend fences, I don't ever see that happening. Just because I know Dana, and hey, that's never going to be him. So, yeah, I don't even think about it. Because I'm 99.9% sure it'll never happen. So, kind of tough, it is what it is. So, I you know, can accept that. I don't mind. The thing I do mind is the grandkids. So, and that they miss out on our family, you know? That they miss out on having a family around. Dana and his wife, I don't care how much Dana says, my family means everything to me. He's never around, and his wife isn't either. She doesn't want to be bothered with the kids. So those kids are kind of left with who's ever around, whether it's a nanny or her sister or... their little girl. They have one of the sister-in-laws. She's sort of, it was like Cinderella. She was the one that was always cleaning the house for them and watching the kids and never got to go and do anything with anyone. I always felt bad for her. But the youngest one, his little girl, I mean, like she would fall down or get hurt. She ran to her aunt, not to her mom. You know, and that just went to show, you know, how much Dana's wife even bothers with her own kids. So, you know, I think they missed out on being part of our family. You know, we still, like, I live on the beach in New Hampshire, and, you know, all my brothers were just here recently. I have friends that come all the time, you know. My other grandkids used to be with me all the time until they moved out to Vegas. And Dana's kids said Dana built a house out in, I don't know, Laguna or Malibu or one of those shishi places, you know. But, yeah, he spent, I think, something like $25 million, you know, knocking down a shack and building a new house. And I'm told they go there about 2 weeks out of the year. I'm like, well, it's not great, you know. So.
Wow. You know, well, I'll tell you what, I mean, I'm kind of just awed by things you've been telling us. I mean, he's portrayed so differently, you know, by certain media members. And a lot of us on the show tonight and a lot of the people listening, and there's a lot of people listening throughout the industry tonight that, you know, see and have seen what, you know, you've told us, you know, about the way he treats people, his attitude, his mentality, you know. I mean, you can't fault yourself in any way, shape, or form. I hope you don't for this in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, that's for sure.
You know, I mean, like I said, when I saw the personality thing, and of course it went back to Mom praised him too much when he was little. I thought he was wonderful. I'm like, of course. but, yeah, you know, I mean, it is what it is. You know, a lot of things are just a twist of fate, and that everything came together for him at that time, you know. And it worked out the way it did, and he became the person he is today. In my mind, it's just kind of a twist of fate, you know. So, is what it is. Life, what somebody says, life happens, and that's it.
That's very true.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of, I did an interview once where, I don't remember who it was, but one guy, you know, listened to my story, you know, kind of like you, was, oh my God, I can't believe that's Dana. But then there was another guy who said almost nothing through the whole interview, and, so the guy who had been doing most of the talking said, so do you have any questions for Jim? You know, do you want to say anything to her? And he said, I have nothing to say to that woman. He said, she would write a book about her son and talk about him like this. I'm like, ouch. Oh, my God. So, you know, some people, it's an eye-opener. Other people, there's nothing you're going to say that would ever destroy their image of Dana, you know. So.
Uncle Dana and the Zuffa Zombie Army. Okay, first of all, we've never hid from any truths, whether it's good or bad. If somebody brings us a story and they want us to put it up, whether it's pro-UFC or not, whether it's pro-local MMA or not, you know, that's what we do. We're a media company. We cover every side of the story, and I don't care about any of the big fours out there who want to, you know, be Uncle Dana's best buddy just to get the scoop each week. That's fine. I mean, the same people that think they're getting the scoop are only 2 days behind Home and Garden Network doing the same interview. You know, and it's truly, truly sad that so many people give this guy so much power and way too much respect.
Yeah. Way too much.
I mean, most guys walk around like they're walking on eggshells because they're so worried that they might say or do something that's going to piss them off, and then they're the next guy that's, you know, out of the inner circle. So,
did you, by any chance, see the interview or the video release today from Wanderlei Silva and his disdain for Dana and the UFC and the way they're treating the fighters to the fact that he retired and walked away from the sport?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's been all over social media. Yeah, you'll have to check it out. It's all over. BJPenn.com has it, I believe. It's about a 17-minute rant, and it's beautifully done. And at the end of it, he retires because of what Zuffa is doing.
Yeah,
wow.
I mean, it's just sad. I mean, you look at Randy. I always loved Randy. I thought he was wonderful, and Dana turned on him. I was sickened by the way Dana treated GSP that last fight. I mean, GSP didn't even know who he was or where he was, and Dana's demanding that he do a rematch immediately. I was furious. I was absolutely furious when I saw how he treated him. I mean, GSP has brought them more money than any fighter out there, you know, and then to have him be treated the way he was, and now he's trying to court him back to the UFC. So I hope GSP is smart enough not to do it. He walked out on top, and although I guess he's training again, so probably what Dana's saying, that they're trying to get him back for another fight, and he can have a title fight if he comes back. I'm like, oh, my God, here we go. Now, dangle the carrot out there for somebody else.
I've got one last question I definitely want to get off my chest before we ever run out of time tonight with you. With you obviously growing up with the birth of what today's folks know as UFC, you made some good friends and some good relationships along the way. Is it strenuous on some of those relationships still because people have to maybe be quiet about being your friend?
Yeah, I think a lot of them have gone one way or the other, basically. You know, they couldn't straddle that fence for very long. Dana made that quite clear to everybody. You know, and a few of them along the way, Dana has screwed over. So, you know, they kind of see things through my eyes now. You know, it takes a little bit, lots of times. People really, I don't know, there's like a veil there that they can't see through. And then when that curtain opens and they kind of see the person behind it, you know, they're pretty surprised. I can't even remember what it was, but somebody recently wrote an article and was talking about Dana and the UFC and the way, you know, the MMA press, he controls them, he controls everything that's said about them and everything else. And I went on with this little rant, and I said, I wrote a reply on the bottom of it and said, oh, mama didn't tell you this about 3 or 4 years ago, huh? You know, the blinders are finally coming off. So I think eventually people, you know, and it's sad, I really like to see Bellator. I would like to see somebody pick the sport up and take it where it should go. You know, in my house growing up, my dad was a huge fan of boxing, so we had to watch boxing all the time. And so I, like, even when I went to the first UFC fight, you know, I went and said to Dana, well, I'll go. I'm not particularly interested in watching a couple guys beat each other to a bloody pulp, but I said, I'll know a lot of people there and I'll just chat with everyone. But I am amazed at what's inside of all of us, because once you could see that the guy was, he was going to take him down however, you know, with a punch or a chokehold or something, you know, an arm bar, you were on your feet, like screaming for him to finish the guy. I'm like, where does this come from? You know? And I will say that one thing I did that I have yet to see any of the others do, it was electric when you went to those games. I mean, the fights. It was just unbelievable. You could feel it in the arenas, you know, the anticipation of the fights, and especially if it was certain fighters coming on, Tito or Chuck or Randy, you know, you could just feel it in there. And I noticed that at all the other fights I've gone to, it's not there. These guys need to learn how to pump the audience sort of into a frenzy before the fights even get started. And that's what the UFC was able to do. And they were able to build stars, which they don't even do anymore. Everybody's pulling back all these old guys, you know, that had names at one time in the UFC or in the MMA. So I don't see them, you know, Bellator trying to take some of these guys now. Rampage and a lot of them over to their side, and people, you know, can associate those names, and they may bring in some viewers. But I think they really need to take a lot of these new guys and build them up. There was some kid who fought tonight on Bellator, young kid, like 20 years old. I think he was from Brazil. Cocky little shit. I disliked him immediately. But, oh, my God, what a great fighter. So he would be somebody that if I were there, I would take and build that kid, because you're going to have the ones who hate him, and they're going to watch him fight because they want to see him get his ass kicked. And then you're going to have the ones that love him because he's a great fighter, you know. But nobody seems to do that with the fighters anymore. So I'm hoping somebody comes along and has that mindset and sort of heads off in that direction again.
We said the same thing about Newton winning with another spinning back fist. We're like, look, quick pump King Mo. Pump this guy. This guy's knocking people out with, like, the coolness, you know?
Yeah.
They've got to learn. Go ahead.
Did you see the Bellator fight, the kid I'm talking about?
Yes.
He did, a liver kick. Oh, my God. I could feel it.
Yeah, he took out Poppy Martinez, the Tachi Palace kid.
Yes. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. And that's the other thing. You know, I'd like to see, where are the good matchmakers? Joe Silva is a pretty good matchmaker, but, you know, I'd like to see a match go more than the first round, you know, and I'd like to see them evenly paired, you know, with their skills, not one be a wrestler and one be, you know, a striker. So put some more guys in the ring.
I'll be honest, we have that problem up here. I think I could be wrong, but I'm going to throw it out. I think it was Rick Little. His event, it was like 9 first-round finishes, you know, and like every one of them was a was it Rick Little's event? Yeah. This is wonderful.
Yeah,
one
ended in 40 minutes. 40 minutes time for the
whole
card.
Event, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
You know,
you want to see a good fight. Look at boxers. They go 12 rounds. Come on. You got to have some MMA guys that can go 3. So that kind of is what I like about the kickboxing, the World Series. There's no laying on each other. There's no wrestling. There's no hanging on each other. There's no laying up against the cage or the ropes or anything. It's nothing but fighting, and that's it. And it's good fighting, too. So, you know, I wish they would do better.
See, I'm a huge, huge kickboxing fan. Been following some of these leagues for years and years. And, like, Super Combat, Contender Promotion, you know, or some of the up-and-comers in Europe right now. And I'm hoping that we see more of the, you know, K1s and the Super Combats coming to American television, coming to the States to showcase their platform. Because I think personally that's what's going to hurt the UFC the most, is bringing over the professional kickboxing league. I think in the 80s and early 90s it was not, you know, produced right and shared right to the fans. And with today's social media, today's fights, The human chest match that is kickboxing, see a lot more finishes. We see a lot more technical fighting. I think that's what's going to take away ultimately from the UFC and hurt their bottom line is kickboxing.
Yeah, I hope so too. You know, not that I wish anything bad on Dana and the Fertittas, but I like the way kickboxing is, you know, and it's like you said, it's very technical. Whereas I see the UFC kind of more becoming more like brawls that you could see at a CD bar, you know. So, yeah, it doesn't seem to be as technical with most of the guys in the ring once they get in there. They don't seem to have it like the guys who do kickboxing. So I think kickboxing might be what my other brother there that I talked about, he watches it too. And the two of us just happened to find Glory one night on TV. He lives in Florida now at the same time. And he called me. He goes, what are you watching? And I'm like, I don't know. I said, some kickboxing show I just came across flipping through the channels. He goes, BJ, did you just see that last fight? And I'm like, it was amazing, you know. I always stayed on the phone for the whole rest of the fights talking about him.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
I'm just so glad that he didn't destroy your love for this sport like, you know, I mean, we've seen it lately, you know. We're seeing more and more guys walk away from the UFC and it leaves a bad taste in their mouth. And I'm very, very glad that he didn't do that to you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're a good
man. I mean, like, I'll be honest. I got people telling me, man, they're like, they're going to skip work because they've been staying up to listen to this interview. You know, I mean, I'm truly, truly blessed and honored that you took your, you know, time out of your day to come hang out with us. You know, and anytime you just want to talk combat sports, anything, man, you're always welcome to call into this show and just hang out and talk. It doesn't, you know, you never have to talk about the UFC and Dana White again with us if you don't want to. You gave us an hour and 30 minutes of some of the greatest radio ever produced.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm pretty good at chatting, so.
Well, it's just great because we got to know you. We got to, you know, learn about you, and we got to see that you have a great passion for combat sports and not a hatred, which I'll be honest, I was talking to some buddies down at work today down at the bar because, you know, I was telling everybody, I was like, I flipped out, honestly, when I called you back. I walked outside, there was like 30 people on the back patio drinking, and everyone's like, what's wrong? Why are you so white? And I was like, you would not believe who just I talked to on the phone. And everybody was just like, wow, you know, I wonder if she just hates the sport. And that's when it hit me. I'm like, oh, I hope I don't bring her on and she just hates MMA now because that would be so sad, you know.
I have a lot of people, like, you know, the book's still floating around out there and everything. And there's a little coffee shop across the street from my house and the book's over there too. And every once in a while, the girl who owns it will call me up and she'll go, June, someone's buying your book. And I told him you just live across the street and you would sign it for him. And I just find it so bizarre and weird that people want my signature on a book. I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. But we used to laugh at Dana in the beginning, especially I have an older brother who went to the fights one time. And all these people were wanting their picture taken with him and his autograph, and my brother was about on the floor laughing. He goes, are you kidding me? He goes, I remember changing his diapers. He just couldn't look at him the way everyone else does.
No doubt.
You know, that's got to, you know, obviously, you know, the book, you know, you probably got a, you know, a lot of people, you know, like you said, that were against you for doing it, and you got a lot of people that were for you doing it. Looking back now that it's been, you know, I guess 3 years, a little over 3 years, are you happy or sad that you did the book?
No, I'm glad I did it because, you know, I mean, it was tough. I mean, just writing about him, it sort of cleared up a lot of things that I felt were out there, you know, that he had a horrible life, that, you know, his mom was like Eminem's mother, that, you know, the stuff with his grandmother and, you know, the person I saw him change into. I had only done it as an ebook, and I only put it out for maybe a week. You know, it was sort of one of those things like, here's a big slap in your face, wake up and see what you're doing, you know? And it obviously didn't work that way, and that was when all those attacks started on social media. And I said, oh no, I'm not going to go crawl under a rock and hide. So I put it back out there, and I put it out in paperback as well. I thought that was the wrong thing to do to me.
Well, you know, June, for real, man, this is like Christmas for me, and I'm a Jew, so, I mean, that's really cool, you know.
There you go.
I can't even explain how, like, I got people sitting across from me in the studio looking at me like, they're like, wow, you got a smile on your face for, you know, almost 2 hours, you know, I mean, this has truly been a blessing and an honor. I can't thank you enough. And I hope one of these nights down the road, you know, you're just hanging out, you want to talk MMA or kickboxing, that, you know, you feel free to come on our show and join us. I mean, that's what this is about. Yeah. It's an open platform for any folks who want to talk, you know, about anything combat sports related. And usually we let people give shout outs. So I don't know if you have any, like, and usually it's fighters, managers, promoters, so I don't know, like, do you want to give some shout-outs to anybody?
I don't think so.
Okay. You know, I can't
Dana
thank
White.
You enough.
Shout out from your mama. Shout out from your mama.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, that is sweet and funny. I love that. Definitely. June, I definitely will be talking to you off air this week. I'll get all of you, because like I said, some of the other shows on our network would love to sit down and talk with you if you want to do it.
Good. Yeah, okay. It was a pleasure talking with you guys.
You have
yes,
a wonderful
you.
Night, young lady.
Thank you. You too.
Bye. Wow, folks. That was one of the greatest shows ever, Jeff. Beatdown?
Yeah, it was awesome.
If I had a sister, I would force her to marry you. Thank you, brother. I guys, everybody, I want to thank right now, live on air, MMA Beatdown. This guy shows Madhouse so, so much love. And he went out of his way to set this up, me and June together, to talk, to get her on the show. And Beatdown, man, thank you, brother. You're a great friend. You're a great family member to Team Madhouse, man. Thank you once again for the love. We are now going to be live with Randa Marcos Thomas. Randa, how are you doing this evening?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, obviously, with the debut of Tough 20 last week, there was a lot of expectations. There was obviously a lot of high-profile girls on the show. You know, a lot of people that we, I think for the first time in the history of the show, going into a season, people have been familiar with the majority of the cast, yourself being one of those. And I want to say first and foremost, what are your honest opinions of that ranking system?
I think they did a pretty good job with the rankings, except, like, obviously they didn't know me too well, so they didn't rank me very high. And I understand that, you know, I didn't fight some of the top people like Tisha did or other people have, you know, and I didn't fight in Invicta either, so they didn't really know where I stood. So, but everybody else was pretty much in Invicta, and they ranked them according to how they performed in Invicta. So, I don't know, I think they did a pretty good job with the rankings, and I'm... You know, I'm okay with how they set me up. I was pissed at the time, but, you know, they don't know me. I didn't get to fight Invicta, so that's, I guess, to them, I was number 14.
Very well put. So you felt like going into that since they didn't really know you maybe as well as some of the other ladies on the show, that you had to prove yourself, which you went out and did right off the bat. I mean, obviously getting a very dominating victory over Tisha. What was that? What were your initial thoughts when they announced that you had won that fight?
I went in there pretty confident. You know, I went in there with no pressure on me. So I just went in there to show, and that's why I'm on that show. You know, I wanted to prove to everybody what I could do, what I'm capable of. Not getting those opportunities, kind of like I had this like drive inside of me to finally give everyone, you know, show everyone what I can do. And when they put my hand up, I was like finally, I get to show everybody what I could do. And like I was pretty confident going into that fight, even though people thought I shouldn't be, you know, being ranked number 14. But, yeah, then winning that fight, it was just, like, it was awesome having Dana White sitting there watching me win that fight. It was just an awesome experience.
Now, what was it like? Now, I know, you know, I'm not going to try and push it because I know you can't really answer too much because we're only two episodes in, and I think probably the first thing people always want to do is try and get secrets out of you guys. But, I know I'm not going to try and push it and get you in trouble, but what was it like in that house to have so many kind of like intense personalities? Obviously, you've got the drama coming into the house between Felice and Heather Jo. A lot of the girls on the show have already fought each other and have some experience in there. Having coming into the show kind of as you mentioned, kind of as an outsider without having the Invicta background, what was it like for you trying to kind of just fit into the mold there?
Honestly, it was like a nightmare. For me, it was a nightmare because I don't really like hang out with too many girls, and I don't like to train with other girls. So this time, like, and especially my weight class, so they put me in a house with a bunch of chicks that I have to fight one day. It was a nightmare. And then just like being such a quiet person and having to go out there with all these, you know, loud girls, some of them pretty obnoxious. You know, it was a nightmare, but it was really cool to see how everyone trains, how everyone acts, and how everyone, you know, just to get to know these personalities that you see on TV and you hear about all the time. It was pretty cool to see what kind of people they actually were.
Now, the episodes are airing now. Walk us through what it's like to be sitting down at home. You've already went through this experience in the house and seeing yourself on TV and how they edit everything. What's that like?
It's really cool to see how they edit it. It looks really, really good, but I wish it was longer. I wish they could show like all the little things that we had to go through that wasn't put on the screen. You know, like 6 weeks of being there every day, being around these girls like 24/7. And then you get like a glimpse of what we actually did. You know, it's pretty cool to see, but at the same time, I wish we could I could show everyone what else happened during that time. You know, but it's too bad that it's such a short episode that they cram everything into like 1 hour, and you guys don't get to see all that stuff.
You talked about being an outsider in the house. After your episode aired and you beat Keisha, it seemed like social media exploded. And they just love you. How does that feel?
It feels great. You know, I just went in there. I was just myself, and I refused to be anybody but myself. You know, there's a lot of like strong personalities in there that try to break you and try to, you know, get you to react to certain things and, you know, do whatever it takes to try to get something out of you. And it was really hard to try to be myself. But I did. I was myself, and you know, some people like me, they like me. If they don't, well, I'm sorry. You know, this just all I could be is myself. And I'm surprised that, you know, a lot of people, you know, reacted good to me. And, like, I've been getting this good feedback. Like, I really appreciate that. And I'm really glad that it turned out the way it did.
Now, what's that like being in the houses? We've talked with tough cast members in the past on the show here. And they say really that the hardest thing that people don't understand is the mental toughness that you have to exhibit to kind of survive the house. I mean, so was that like that for you ladies on this season? Where did you have that, where it was kind of tough at times to just get through being in the house?
Yeah, that was the toughest part, definitely. Like, everything else was easy compared to that. Getting in the cage was easy compared to just living with the girls and like listening to them, putting up with them. You know, some of them can be really nasty. You know, sometimes, you know, I just wait in the room till nobody's in the kitchen, and, you know, you wait for hours till it clears up, then you go in the kitchen because you just don't want to see somebody, or you just don't want to, you know, throw an argument at somebody. It got pretty tough, you know, at times, and it really makes you a strong person mentally coming out of that house.
Now, were there any personalities specifically that you did try to kind of evade and stay away from?
Not really. Like, I like to be alone. I like to be quiet, you know, like to just stay, you know, alone and just have my thoughts in my head, you know. And it was pretty hard just to be around anybody. You know, people constantly, you know, talking to you, asking you things. Like it's nice to have somebody there to talk to, but I'm the type of person who just likes to be alone. So it was difficult every day just, like, trying to have a conversation with somebody who you know you might face one day. I don't want to be friends with you. I'm going to have to fight you one day, you know? It's just really hard everyday things.
Yeah. Now, I want to ask a little bit about, you know, I read this article that was actually posted, I think, earlier today, kind of just about your life, about your upbringing, about the kind of the things that you and your family have been through and the importance. And the reason I bring this up is because of a quote that says, that pretty much sums up the importance of MMA in your life. And we've had some fighters locally out of Tampa here where I'm at, and just kind of international fighters that we've talked to in the past that have kind of uttered the same statements about the importance of MMA in their life and how it saved them from what could have been in their life. Talk to us a little bit about how it's played a role in your life. What has MMA done for you?
Well, you know, I had a really rough life growing up. You know, every day was a struggle. Every day was a battle in my own house. It was like a war in my own living room every day. And I hung around with some, you know, sometimes, like, not so good people, you know, growing up in high school and stuff. So just being strong, you know, and just having that, you know, escape where I could just leave everything at the door, walk in, put a smile on my face, and pretend that everything's okay, and just let out all your frustrations on the mat, and just, you know, just having something that you do for yourself and something to, like, you know, you can be happy with. You can walk away and just be happy that you accomplished something today, even though, you know, there's so much bad stuff going on around you. You can just put it all aside and have that for yourself. And it just, like, it really helped me grow as a person. You know, it helped me be strong, helped me learn that, like, even though there's a lot of bad things going on, there's a lot of good things, too. So it helped me see the good things out of life instead of just focusing on the bad.
Right on. That's very awesome. Now, when it comes to a lot of these girls having the Invicta background, having known themselves before, do you feel like it was more of an uphill battle for you to prove yourself to the other fighters? Because I know you mentioned how you felt like you had to prove yourself to the coaches, and that win over Tisha was a big way of doing that. But did you feel like you had to at least at all prove yourself to the other fighters and prove that you belonged there?
Honestly, I don't really care about what the other fighters think of me. I obviously care about, you know, what the judges think of me and what the, you know, people like Dana White think of me, because I want to prove to them that what I can do. But with the other fighters, I could care less. You know, I'm better off with them still thinking I'm the underdog. You know, I could care less what they think, really.
Now, you were on Team Pettis. And, I mean, you have Anthony Pettis, Sergio Pettis, Duke Rufus. What's it like training with these guys, some of the best out there?
You know, I loved it. And, like, I know that some of the girls you guys watched on the last episode, that they were complaining about the coaching and how they were over-coaching us and whatever. Like, I loved it. You know, I loved everything they had to tell me. I know I need a lot of work. I need a lot of, you know, groundwork that needs to be fixed, stand up that needs to be fixed, and I was taking in everything they had to tell me, and it sucked that, you know, a few people spoke for the rest of the team and said, hey, you know, this is too much for us, but I enjoyed every bit of what they had to say, and I took in as much as I could, and, you know, it was great to see how Anthony Pettis works and how his team helps him get better. He's a freaking champ for a reason. You know, I want to take everything I can from him. It was great just working with him.
Yeah, now I'm glad you bring that up, because I did take notice to Felice and some of the other ladies bringing that up there, talking about how they felt like it was too stop and go. Now, I've been in MMA gyms before where I've seen that, where you have one coach kind of come over and grab a group of people, tell them to start kind of drilling something, and then somebody else will come over a minute or two later and have you stop and go do something else. And I was noticing that myself with a little bit of the coaching for the teams there, that there was a lot of stop and go. Now you're saying you kind of liked the flow of how things went, and you really didn't have any problem with the stop and the go and the changes or anything that were going on?
No, honestly, I didn't have a problem with it. I know I need a lot of, you know, fixing with my technique and stuff, so I was taking in as much as they could give me, you know. They've trained a million different athletes. I know they know what they're talking about. So I'm not a person to be like, hey, listen, like, I know what I'm doing. You know, I would never say that. I just I was taking it as much as I could, and I enjoyed every bit of it.
What's probably the biggest takeaway from being on the show for you? Obviously, I know that we don't know what's going to happen throughout the season. You know, how you progress or how the other ladies progress. But for your career, in more of an introspective term, what's the biggest takeaway for you from this season?
I like to say, you know, just be yourself through everything and just follow your dreams and don't let anybody underestimate you and don't let anybody label you as, okay, well, you're just a ground person, you're just a stand-up person. You know, like, it's MMA, anything can happen. And what I take from that is just stay true to yourself and just follow your dreams and don't let anybody let you think anything other than that. Because that's, I think, like, by putting rankings out there, it kind of, like, makes you think, okay, well, I'm ranked lower than this person, so I can't possibly win. You know, it's just, like, it's a mind game. So, you know, as long as you believe in yourself and have faith in yourself, it doesn't matter who the hell ranks you or where the hell you stand in the game. You know, you can do whatever you think you can.
Now, lastly, before we let you get out of here, What can we expect to see? What kind of potential fireworks, excitement, just kind of crazy things, or just great fights? What kind of just give us a little teaser of what's in store for the remainder of this season.
I can tell you this, but people are very nice right now. Everyone seems so nice, so perfect, you know. You're going to see that completely change soon. That's all I can tell you.
Right on. Well, listen, Randa, thank you so much for joining us. As I said, you know, Tisha is a fighter who I followed for a while, and I really felt like she was one of the favorites to win this season. And you just went out there and just put on a phenomenal performance. You know, it looked like early on in the fight she was having some success, and you just completely took over that fight. And it was a great fight. It was great to see that we could be shocked. You know, I think you shocked everybody watching, and it was awesome. It kind of put us all back in our seats and go, wow, you know, I would think probably instantly there were these Google searches. Who is Randa Marcos Thomas? Who is this girl? And it just it was a phenomenal debut on that show, and it was a great way to kick off the season. So thank you so much for kind of giving us that, because while we might be hosting this show, we are both big fans of women's MMA, and we've been looking forward to this for a long time. So it was awesome to kind of see a young fighter, unknown on the grand scale, kind of come out and make us kind of wake us all up there. So thank you for giving us a great kickoff to this season. We look forward to seeing great things from all of the ladies, including yourself, from here on out.
Thank you so much. There's going to be some awesome fights. Definitely some awesome fights. Thank you so much for all your support, and thank you so much for having me.
You got it. Before we let you go, why don't you give a shout-out to your sponsors and where people can find you on social media?
I just want to thank everybody. You can find it on my website, randamarcosthomas.com. Mayuna, Boston Pizza, like just everyone. I totally forget, but everyone who supported me, everyone who sponsored me, thank you so much. I wouldn't be here without you, and all my teammates and all my sparring partners. Everybody's helped me to get here. Thank you so much.
All right, Randa, thank you so much for joining us. You have yourself a great night. We'll look forward to seeing some great things from you as the season unfolds.
You too. Thank you.
Bye. You got to have a good night, Randa.
You too.
Randa Marcos Thomas, obviously, as I said, kind of shocked the whole world there when she defeated Tisha Torres.